Together with American Songwriter, we had the opportunity to talk to Softglass over Zoom video. Softglass talked about being born in Cuba. His family ended up moving to the Dominican Republic. His dad is a jazz musician, and that allowed them to move from the Dominican Republic to South Florida. Softglass talked about growing up in South Florida, being a fan of Newfound Glory, which I thought was really rad. He actually was born and raised in Coral Springs, where Newfound Glory was from, and he's a drummer, so it was really rad to hear him talk about watching the episode that we did with Cyrus. So that meant a lot to me. I thought that was really cool. But he talks about his journey in music, actually, as a drummer, trying to get into Florida State. Didn't get in as a drummer. Went to school there anyway. Took a different path, but it all led back to music. He ended up working with some people, moved to New York City, got involved in a lot of production and working with other people, finally put out some music on his own. And from there, he's just had some amazing, amazing success. He even produced his dad's most recent record during COVID. And that record is up for a Grammy for Best Latin Jazz Album of the Year, which is massive. He's also got a new song out called Cyclones, so check that out. And you can watch the interview with Softglass and myself on our Facebook page and YouTube channel, at Bringing It Backwards. And follow us on Instagram and Twitter, at Bringing Back Pod.
We'd appreciate your support if you follow and subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're bringing it backwards with Softglass. This is about your journey in music and how you got to where you are now. So tell me about where you grew up.
For sure. I grew up in South Florida. I was born in Cuba. And
oh, wow.
I was born in Cuba. My dad... And honestly, my dad's entire side of the family, they were all musicians. And my dad started touring when he was really young. He's a pianist, and he started touring probably when he was like 16, 17. And they got to a point where he needed to basically like leave Cuba to be able to, you know, further his career in a sense. And so, I had just been born. This was like 1991, and we moved to Dominican Republic. We lived there for like 5 years, and then we moved to South Florida to a town called Coral Springs. So that's where I grew up, basically, and that's where I am right now.
Oh, that's awesome. Springs, Florida. What a journey, man. I know, because I was going to ask, if you were born in Cuba, that was kind of a weird time here in the States as far as like letting people over. It was just like a bizarre time. So that's interesting that you went to Dominican Republic and then came to the United States. Wow.
Yeah. But and I don't think, obviously, I don't think it would have been possible if not for, you know, my dad's work and being a musician. And basically he had American jazz artists basically like petition the Cuban government to allow him to leave, to be able to tour with them.
Really?
And to be able to work outside. Yeah. So,
whoa.
So that's how, that's how we were able to get out. But yeah. And then settled in South Florida and grew up and went to school down here and went to college in Florida. So South Florida, Coral Springs, Florida.
That's cool. That's really cool. Well, wow, man. So your dad's a musician, obviously. So I'm sure he's kind of an influence on how you got into music as well.
Yeah, but I don't think it was necessarily as over the head as some people might think, that, you know, having a father who's a musician and there being any sort of like, you know, pressure. It was just very normalized, you know. Mm-hmm. My dad just being a musician and constantly playing music in the house, and the idea of music as a life and as a career was just a normal thing for me, you know. And mm-hmm. I think I have a brother and a sister, and neither of them are necessarily musicians. My brother's a designer and screenwriter. My sister dances and is an actor, but they don't play instruments or are pursuing a career in music. So it's not like we were ever pressured in any way. It was just personally, I always gravitated towards music. And it wasn't even like my dad. I mean, my dad's a jazz pianist, and my first, you know, love in music was like, you know, I grew up in Coral Springs, so it was like Newfound Glory. It was like legends. And
I love Newfound Glory.
Yeah, I listened to the episode with Cyrus,
which was
like amazing hearing him talk about Coral Springs. And I got like really emotional because he talked about, you know, they had done this tour with like Finch and Something Corporate. And I went to that show down here, and that was like my first time hearing Something Corporate. And I was like, wait, that's like really cool. He's playing the piano while, you know, right, in a rock band. And there's these like, yeah. Yeah. And that kind of led me down this whole rabbit hole. And that's honestly like, that's, I feel like most of my journey through music is just littered with these rabbit holes of like very random, but like deep, deep obsessions with different types of music.
Wow, that's
awesome. With that being the first.
Yeah, that's really awesome. Yeah, I mean, yeah, he was so cool. And I loved his backdrop, man. He's like standing in front of like every, like so many tour posters from Newfound Glory.
Yeah.
Like, whoa. So yeah, that was really dope. That's super cool. And I've had Andrew McMahon on the show as well, who is, and that was pre-COVID when we could actually like hang out with him. So he's just such a nice guy. One of the nicest people you'll ever meet. So that's really awesome.
Yeah. I listened to that episode as well. I'm telling you, I'm a fan of the show.
I appreciate it. I really appreciate that, dude. That's so cool. So what did you first learn how to play? What was your first instrument?
So I first learned how to play drums. And so that was kind of what I like gravitated to at first. And, you know, being a huge Newfound Glory fan, I was like into like, I wanted to be just like Cyrus at the time, you know, and I was like in these little garage bands when I was in middle school, and that, you know, they were like kind of pop punk at first, and then they became these like screamo bands and like hardcore bands. And so that was like, I was just like obsessed with the drums at the time. And when I got to high school, I think my friends just got tired of being in bands because it just like they weren't really ever passionate about it. It was just something that we did on the weekends.
Sure.
So I needed a way to kind of, you know, exercise that and be able to play in a group setting instead of just like in my room by myself. Mm-hmm. So I joined the marching band and jazz band and like as many different like school bands as I could. And that was really kind of changed my trajectory, because through the school bands, I became obsessed with like jazz music through the jazz band, you know? And that was funny, because at that point I came, you know, to my dad and I was like, hey dad, I like jazz now. And he's just like, finally, what do you want to know? You know,
that's awesome. That was probably a really big moment for him.
Yeah. And it was cool, cause we had, you know, we were finally speaking the same language, cause he always would share music with me. But you know, I was maybe necessarily at the time, it wasn't what I was into, but as I got older, our tastes kind of like merged, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Yeah.
So once you started getting into jazz and playing in jazz band and marching band, did that lead to any other band, or is that where you kind of started producing stuff on your own?
Well, that's kind of what, at that point, I in my head I was set that I was, that was going to be my career, was jazz drummer, you know. Okay. I fell passionately in love with jazz, and I started studying different drummers like, you know, Al Foster, who played a lot with Joe Henderson, and Brian Blade, who was playing with Joshua Redman at the time. And I was just obsessed with jazz as an art form. And I had it in my head that I was going to be a jazz drummer. And so I applied to Florida State's music school.
Oh, wow.
For their jazz program. And this was my senior year of high school. And I was just like, I was ready to start the beginning of the rest of my life, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I got denied from the music school. Uh-huh. And which, like, whatever, like looking back, I just, like, I wasn't good enough. I completely understand their decision. Cause when I eventually, you know, as I got older and I saw like what these cats were doing in music school, I was like, oh yeah, no, I cannot hang with them at all. Like,
really?
It was probably for the best that, it was for the best that I ended up not, you know, going down that path. But at the time I was pretty devastated, and I thought, well, maybe, you know, maybe drums isn't for me. Like, I don't know why I had such a strong reaction to that, that failure, you know, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. But it kind of just like deviated everything for me, where I didn't know what I was going to do at that point. It was just like, well, okay, it was a weird wake up call where I felt like, okay, I'm not good enough to get into music school. So maybe like I should look into other things. Like maybe I should study something else.
Sure.
And for a while I like majored in psychology, and, you know, I ended up going to Florida State, just not for music. And, in the dorms, just to kind of scratch that itch, I started playing with GarageBand and like started making beats on GarageBand, because I still loved music. I mean, I was still extremely passionate about making music and the process of the creative process behind making music. And obviously I couldn't play drums anymore. I didn't have a drum set in my dorm room. I didn't have access to a drum set. So I started producing, you know, on my laptop. Wow. In my dorm room. And that, another rabbit hole, you know, I started getting into beat making, and like I discovered Dilla
stuff. Okay.
Yeah. I discovered Dilla stuff. I discovered, like, you know, Ninth Wonder and all these different producers that were taking this music that I loved, which was jazz. Uh-huh. And they were making something completely different with it. And that to me sparked something else, this sense of creation, you know, beyond just performance or, you know, playing the music. The act of actually making the music, I realized how much I loved, you know.
Yeah.
So that's
amazing. So you get to, you're in college, you said you're studying psychology or something like
that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, I went for communications. It's always just like, yeah, I'll choose a random thing and
yeah.
That's it right there. But so you're in college, you're working on GarageBand, and do you like are you putting these songs and these beats up like on SoundCloud? Like how did you start getting the career kind of going?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even think about that. Because in my head, I still didn't view it as, you know, something that I wanted to do as a career. It was just at that point I was like, okay, I'm going to be a psychologist, but I'm just going to like make music on the side. Mm-hmm. And I was working at the Florida State football team, like pro shop, like where they sell like jerseys and whatnot, just like as a part-time job. And a coworker of mine showed me that like he had a rap group that him and his buddy were in, and he was like, yeah, man, you know, like we're just missing, we need a producer, you know, we don't like, we need someone to make us beats, like we can't like just keep using these stock beats that we're finding on YouTube, like we want someone to like in-house produce for us. And I was like, well, you know, I can try. And I showed him some stuff. He's like, wow, this is crazy. It really wasn't good at the time at all. Like looking back, I'm so grateful for them to like gas me up that way, because if I would have heard those beats, I would have been like, yeah, man, I think we're good, you know?
Actually.
Yeah, on second thought, you know, let me know if you know anyone.
Right.
but that was the first time I kind of collaborated with anyone and took it seriously enough to share my music with anyone. Mm-hmm. And I think after a couple years, I think maybe my junior year of college, SoundCloud became really popular and really big. And I started putting my music on SoundCloud just as a way to almost like a resume of sorts, you know, like mm-hmm. a portfolio where I could send someone my SoundCloud link and be like, hey, check, this is like my style. This is what I can make. And I think that was maybe the first time I shared anything. It was just junior year of college on SoundCloud.
Wow.
And I still didn't, I mean, it still felt so far-fetched that I would consider that, you know, a career, because I mean, I was a year away from graduating, you know, with this psychology degree, and which was fine. Like, it was cool. I enjoyed it. But it wasn't until my senior year that I had a friend ask me if I wanted to be in his band, because he had heard like the SoundCloud stuff. And, you know, like just through talking, he I told him that I had played drums, you know, in high school. And he was like, yeah, well, I have this band and we're looking for a drummer because we're starting to do some shows around town. Do you want to be in the band? And it was a band called After the Smoke. And they were big in Tallahassee, Florida at the time. They were kind of these alternative hip hop. It was like an alternative hip hop group that would take like rock and mix it in with hip hop. And it was really cool at the time. It felt really fresh. And I was like, yeah, sure. I would love to play some drums for y'all. One of the guys that I was playing with ended up moving away from Tallahassee and he moved to New York. My buddy named Rufat. And he was like, hey man, if you ever need a place to crash in New York, let me know. Like, I'm going to try to just make the music thing work for me out there. Mm-hmm. And at the time I was like, yeah, sure. I'll let you know. I'll find out there, man.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah, exactly. But I played drums for After the Smoke for a little while and it still felt like very, very casual to me. And then after I graduated, I remember the summer after I graduated college, I came back home. I didn't really want to go to grad school for psychology. I felt this void of like, I don't know what I want to do. I know what I enjoy doing. I know I enjoy making music. I know I love and I have a passion for producing and for playing, but I don't know how to put all of that together. Like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do at this point in my life. It just so happened that my buddy Rufat ended up calling me and said, hey, my roommate just moved out. Do you want to move in? And like, I have a place in Brooklyn. Do you want to just come like live in New York?
Wow.
And it was so spur of the moment. Within a week, I like packed my stuff and moved to New York. And I think when I got there, it was almost like, okay, well, I have to make something work out while I'm here. And like, mm-hmm. why not just like try this? Why not try to make music a career at this point? Because I don't really feel passionate about anything else. I don't love anything the same way that I love making music. And it just, nothing else felt, I didn't feel this higher calling for anything else in the world. And so I figured, why not? Mm-hmm. And so I did. I moved to New York. And just through my friend Rufat, I ended up meeting other artists in the New York scene. And I started meeting people, telling them that I make music, I produce here and there. And we had one of our like cross the street neighbors were a group called Chargo. And I met them through my friend Rufat. And they were like, yeah, we're looking for a music director, someone to help us put our live show together. And at the time I was like, well, I can play drums. I play a little bit of keys. I know how to produce. Maybe like, why don't I
give this a shot?
Yeah.
right.
And it was so nerve wracking. It was just like the most extreme case of imposter syndrome at the time. Cause it was just like, what am I doing? Like, this is, I'm absolutely just winging it. Every single like minute that passed, I was just like, oh, they're gonna figure it out. They're gonna figure out that I'm just
they're gonna find out that I'm not a musician here real quick. Even though you like totally are.
but that is a good point. I mean, I think that I always had that reference point of my dad and him being such an incredible musician and, you know, seeing what it actually looked like to be a professional musician and mm-hmm. feeling like, oh, that's, I am nowhere near that, so there's no way that I can consider myself an artist, a musician, a professional musician. And I think that's just part of the growing pains, you know. Sure. Just coming to terms with, you know, maybe your version of what being a musician is, you know. Mm-hmm. Or what your version of being an artist is. So, and that was kind of it almost felt accidental, the way that I started working with Chargo, and then I, through those gigs, I started meeting people just in either in sessions or at shows, and they'd be like, oh yeah, like I saw what you did with Chargo, like, you know, I would love for you to help me out with my show or produce some stuff for me. And that's kind of how it snowballed. And it was very slow. It, you know, we're talking, I moved to New York in 2013, and maybe 2016, I was still figuring out. I think by the end of 2016 was when I decided I'm going to be an artist, you know?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But it always, prior to that, you were just working for other people and just kind of producing and kind of helping other people on their projects. Yeah. What made you decide, and, you know what, this is, I need to do something for myself here?
Well, because I think two reasons. I think I envied the fulfillment that I would see artists get out of performing their music and, you know, seeing their ideas through from an idea to execution and like putting out a song that they had, you know, recorded and worked on. And I envied that. I envied the process of seeing, you know, someone create something that's their own. And for so long I was helping other people get from point A to point B. Mm-hmm. But it was always through the filter of what, you know, someone else wanted. And if I was working on a song with an artist and maybe I had some ideas, I always had to filter those ideas through what the artist ultimately wanted mm-hmm. for their music, because it is their music. And so I felt a yearning for that, a yearning for, you know, expressing myself like with like completely through my own means, you know, and just kind of sharing my ideas as they are without the filter of maybe someone else. And so that was one reason. And then the second reason was I started feeling like, you know, I think I started feeling like I was building towards something. You know, every project I had, I would learn a new skill set. So the first project with Chargo, I learned basically how to music direct and mm-hmm. take someone's music and translate it to the stage. And another project I worked on, I had to learn basically how to play keys because I was kind of their one man band mm-hmm. and I was playing some like electric drums and whatnot, but I was also playing some keys on some songs. So I learned how to play keys and learned how to, you know, learn like how to use synthesizers and analog gear and whatnot, just through that experience. Then I learned how to engineer and record music for people just through working on projects with other artists. And I realized I was gaining all of these different skills. And I wanted to just kind of like put it all together and see what I could do with all of these newfound skills. And I realized that the next challenge, to the next kind of thing that I could tackle was like, I don't know, sing, you know, and record mm-hmm. myself and,
sure.
and songwrite. Like these were all things that I saw as, you know, skills that I had yet to attain.
Acquire.
And I thought, yeah. And so that, and it felt like the most direct way to attain those skills was to write my own music and sing my own songs. And I think that's how it happened. Again, it was like a very slow build. It wasn't like, there wasn't one day where I was just like, I want to be an artist because, you know, I want to be out front. Right. And, you know, it wasn't like that. It was almost sure. like, you know, very slowly I started realizing that, you know, maybe I had something I wanted to say through my songwriting, and it felt weird having someone else sing it. So I had to sing it myself. I was like, well, I guess this is my song now, and mm-hmm. I should put it out as my song. So yeah, it was a combination of all of those things that kind of led to me making that decision to release my own music as myself, you know?
Sure. And was that the first record you put out? Was that the Dose EP?
Yeah.
Okay.
And even the Dose EP was still, I wasn't ready to take the full plunge because I don't think I sang on the Dose EP at all.
It looks like you have a lot of featured singers, except for two of the songs that I think are just instrumental.
Right. Yeah. And I think that was still, I think with Dose, I think I have a song with Madison McFerrin on there. That was one of my frequent collaborators. I was helping produce some of her music. Mm-hmm. And I think it was one of those cases where it was like, well, would you want to sing on some of my stuff too? I'm working on this project. But even with Dose, I don't really see as you know, what Soft Glass is today. You know, that was still very much, I was still experimenting with different production styles and very much still using a lot of, like, kind of leaning on a lot of my collaborators at the time, you know.
Did you feel that same way about Late Bloom as well? Or when do you feel like you really broke through as Soft Glass as like your own art, you know, project?
Yeah. I think Late Bloom was that first step. I think Late Bloom was the first time that I felt like I was putting out the music that I wanted to put out, you know? Mm-hmm. And even, I mean, Late Bloom is still filled with collaboration and, you know, featured singers, but I think Late Bloom was the first time I wrote a song. I think Latency off of Late Bloom, I co-wrote that song with Tiffany Stocking Gia. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time that I like wrote lyrics to a song for one of my own songs. And that felt really cool. I was like, oh wow, I kind of want to do this some more, you know?
Sure.
But I think that Orange Earth was the first project that I feel like, you know, it was the first project that I felt represented me as not just a producer or as a engineer or songwriter, but the first project that represented me as a person, mm-hmm. you know, as a person through the music. It was a really personal album. I felt like I had something to say with that album. And I think that's the album that cemented for me, like, okay, I think this is what I want to do mm-hmm. forever.
Sure. I mean, you had a your biggest hit on Spotify was off that record, and it was the song that you sang. I mean, that kind of says something, right?
Yeah. And it felt weird. I felt like I was, you know, I still felt like I was kind of duping people. I'm like, oh man, I don't know. Do I deserve, you know, to have like, you know, something do well right now? Am I good enough for that yet? And, but you know, I don't know. I think it felt really great to be honest and to be kind of just, you know, to show people like who I am as an artist, and people kind of accept it, you know, mm-hmm. or gravitate towards it.
Sure. But I mean, okay. So Perks of Being a Sunflower, it has over, you know, 5.7 ish million plays. I mean, tell me about that. That's crazy. Like, what was the, you know, you put the record out, like how did the success of that song build? Like, did you see that kind of happening quickly? Like, tell me about that.
I think that it was, I mean, I almost didn't put that song out because that was, the story behind that song is basically I had just gotten a new bass. It was like a Hofner violin bass that at the time I was going through a big Beatles phase. And I was like, oh, I got to get a McCartney bass. And so which, you know, you have to. So I got the bass, and that was like the first bass line I played on it. It was just the bass line for Perks. So I recorded it and I added drums to it, and I kind of just like left it as is. And then I think in the shower, I usually like sing in the shower just to come up with random melodies. And I like sang the melody that ended up being Perks. Get out of the shower, record the vocals. The song gets, I made that song in total, maybe like 2 hours or so. And yeah, it was just super, because there was no pressure at the time, you know. It was just kind of like almost like, I'm just testing this gear out, you know. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I saw that song. And even the lyrics, it was just very like stream of consciousness. I think I freestyled most of it. It was just all very spur of the moment. And and then I just forgot about the song. Like, I finished it and I forgot about it. And when I was finishing up kind of putting the album together, my girlfriend was like, well, what about that one that you showed me that one time? I really like that one. I love that song. I was like, okay, I guess, like, sure. Like, I'll include it on the album. And, at the time I was doing these, little videos in my apartment for each song, just to kind of promote each song. I recorded this little video of me like sitting on a couch or like playing Xbox or something, or like playing guitar I don't, it was just something really like dumb. It was just like me singing along to the song. And I put it on Twitter, and I think I went out to dinner, and by the time I got back, I checked my Twitter, and it was just like, the responses were kind of crazy. It was just like thousands and thousands of likes. And it was just kind of like, what's happening right now?
Right.
Like, why? Like, why?
And, did I log into the right account?
Yeah. It was just like, it was so strange to me because a lot of times you can have expectations for things to kind of, in accordance to how much work you put into it. Mm-hmm. You know, if you spend 3 years on a song, by the time you put it out, you know, whether conscious or not, you have a certain amount of expectations, or at least hope for, you know, I hope people will recognize the work that went into this. And I think the opposite is the same, whereas like you barely put any time into something, you kind of don't expect much, you know? So it was very much a surprise to me that people were reacting to the song the way they did. I still don't really get it, to be totally honest with you. I still don't get it because, you know, I don't know. I know that some of my favorite songs, I'll talk to artists and I'll just be like, oh, I love this song. They'll be like, really? That one?
Right. Okay.
You know? And that's kind of how I feel about that song. It's like, I think that song is a very important song for me because it was, you know, it's a clear marker of where I was at that time. As far as just like, you know, being comfortable enough to sing on a song, mm-hmm. which is like a huge deal to me back then.
Sure.
I think that might've been the first time I played bass on a song, you know, just cause I had gotten that violin bass. And so it's special to me in that regard because it's such a clear reflection of where I was at the time, you know, when mm-hmm. I put it out and when I made the song. And so I think, yeah, it's nice. It's still really nice to have people still to this day. I mean, I put that song on 4 years ago almost, and still to this day, people will like, yeah, I love that. That's my favorite song from you. Just like, yeah. Okay, sure. Thank you sure. very much.
How were you out? Were you playing live at this point, or were you out doing shows like in New York or anything?
Not really, because I mentioned before about the kind of these skills that I was learning kind of on the job. Mm-hmm. Singing live and playing guitar live I was not ready for that. That was still okay. yet to be, you know, that was a skill yet to be attained. And so
okay.
I was still working on that. You know, I was still working on getting comfortable enough with my voice because it's very different to sing on a song and have, you know, infinite amount of takes to, sure. to get it right. And then tuning the hell out of it if you want to, you know, mm-hmm. As opposed to going out and performing it live. And at the time I was just not ready. So I had no desire to even perform live. Okay. I was genuinely scared to perform live at the time. So this was 2017, like early, yeah, so late 2017. And I put that album out and I immediately went on tour as a drummer for a band called Overcoats.
Okay. I've heard of that band actually, I think.
Yeah, they're great. And they found out about me through a friend or something who mentioned that I had done music direction and, you know, drumming and whatnot for someone else that they knew. And mm-hmm. So anyway, they called me and I did an audition, and they were about to go on this huge US tour, like cross country tour. And at the time I needed a job. So I was just like, yeah, sure. You know, let's do it. And so I went on tour. I was their touring drummer and MD for about 2.5 years.
Wow.
And it was through that tour, like seeing them perform live every night and, you know, being so close to live performance, live singing, that I started slowly gaining confidence, you know? Mm-hmm. And it became, you know, realistic for me to think, well, maybe I can do it, you know, maybe I'll give this a shot once when I'm done with this. And that's what happened. I mean, I think late 2018, I went on my first little run of shows as Soft Glass. And I mean, it was crazy. I get nervous just thinking about it right now, just because I'm still not comfortable. Like, I'm already kind of shaking. The idea of performing live is still crazy to me.
Okay.
But it was great. I mean, it was just incredible to take on that challenge of something I wasn't comfortable with at all, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, slowly it gets easier over time, the more you do it, but
yeah. Well, you put out a record last year, Stunned. Tell me about that. Like, where were you, like, you know, the beginning of 2020, I'm not sure what month you released a record, but obviously the world shut down in 2020. So like, tell me about where you were prior to COVID and when that hit, like, how'd that affect you?
Yeah. I mean, after I had done that run of shows for, Orange Earth, I immediately started working on new music, and I thought that I could make an album in a year, which was the pace that I was going at for a while. You know, I was putting out music every year. I was putting out a project every year up until that point, basically. And so to me, I thought, okay, now I'll just like work on a project and put it out next year. And you know, it was just creatively speaking, it was just a really tough year. I had really bad writer's block. I went through like the most intense, period of my life as far as doubting myself creatively. Mm-hmm. I didn't like anything that I made. And so that plan of putting out an album in a year ended up taking like 2.5 years. And so eventually I broke out of that. And what came out of that was the music for Stunned. And so I felt really excited about that music, and I thought that I was ready to perform it. And I put together this tour for it. That was going to be my first headlining tour, just like cross country headlining tour, like up the West Coast, like up the East Coast, Midwest. And I put the album out. I'm rehearsing for the shows, and then the COVID stuff happens.
Oh my god!
And like, it all gets canceled. And then it is, I mean, it, obviously like everyone in the world was affected by this. So I can't even, you know, I can't even compare, but at the time it was tough because, you know, I finally felt ready to take that next step as a performer, as an artist. Mm-hmm. And, so yeah, I think I ended up doing 2 shows in Texas, which was like this like little mini run before the actual tour was going to start. And I felt good. I had, you know, there were 2 good shows, and I felt confident in my band, and and then it just, you know, it got canceled.
Oh my.
But the album itself, Stunned, I think it means a lot to me because it represents this like very transitionary period in my life where I actually moved at the end of 2019. I moved away from New York and moved back down to South Florida, which was going to, be this like in between period where I would get ready to tour, then I would do the tour, and then I was going to move to LA. And then obviously the tour didn't happen, and I ended up staying in South Florida, because moving, you know, during COVID is just
probably not the greatest idea.
But yeah, so that's Stunned. And I think I'm, you know, I think as time passes, I realize how much, how strong that period of my life was thematically for me, because that music represents that time almost perfectly, where it's like, I have no idea what is going to happen. You know, I'm kind of in between these 2 eras of my life. And at the time I thought it was, oh, this is like post, you know, New York, pre LA, but really what it ended up being was, you know, post regular life, like pre COVID, you know?
Right.
So yeah, that's Stunned.
Wow. Well, with that, like, where do you find the time to produce a record that's like up for a Grammy this year too? Like, tell me about that whole story.
So that was because of COVID happening, I ended up staying here in South Florida with my parents, And my dad had recorded a live album in Tokyo in 2019. And the plan was to have it be this kind of this hybrid concept of a live album with post-production and kind of like studio production added afterwards in post. Mm-hmm. And when COVID happened, you know, all the studios shut down, and he was kind of lost in that sense of like, well, what are we supposed to do now? We had this plan of releasing this project. Now, how are we supposed to record, you know, all of the stuff in post that we had planned? And I happened to be home because I wasn't on tour. And I was like, well, Dad, like, maybe I can help. Maybe I can, you know, help with this post-production stuff. Maybe we can just record all of it here at home. Mm-hmm. And that's what we did. We just, we mic'd up his piano here at home. We, you know, recorded like all of the percussion stuff, like here in his like small studio upstairs, and just kind of, it was very guerrilla, like, you know, DIY, which is really cool to work on something with my dad that way, because that's how I was used to working, you know, working mm-hmm. out of my apartment, and my dad was used to working out of a studio. And it was cool for our worlds to kind of meet in that way, where it was like, I was like, let me show you what I've been up to, you know,
sure,
like,
let me, sure.
And so that's how it happened. And it was a thing where it was like, well, first, like, they asked me to help record the piano. And then when we did that, it was like, well, could we add some percussion? And then we record the percussion. And then it was like, well, can we add some synth stuff? And then like, oh, could we actually like edit this song? And so slowly I was just kind of given more and more responsibility and tasks. And then it turned into just like a full blown, you know, engineering job and Whoa. Like post-production and editing job. And so that by far is the most fulfilling experience of my career and my life too, just to be able to work on something with my dad and feel, you know, that imposter syndrome that I had been battling like my whole life. Like, mm-hmm. I can't really feel like an imposter, you know, after working with my dad, you know, right. at that level.
Sure. And being nominated for a Grammy. I mean, I didn't realize that was your dad's record that you worked on, like when I was researching it. That's so rad. So was this his first Grammy nomination, or he had been up for Grammys prior?
He's been up for a few. This is his first one in a while. I think the last one was in like the mid 2000s or so, but I think he's won maybe two. Not sure, but wow. Yeah.
So he has a couple.
yeah.
But I mean, wow, to be up for best Latin jazz album of the year, like that's a huge thing, and now you get to be a part of it, and it, unfortunately, it's going to be what, like virtual this year, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be virtual, but I think again, like I think the Grammy thing is. It's special because we did it together. I don't think sure. either of us are, you know, I don't think we necessarily, you know, feel like the Grammy like validates our work in any way, but it's cool to see something that we did together, like, you know, at home be recognized at that level, you
of
know?
Of course. Yeah.
So yeah, we're excited. We're happy. I think it's just it's one of those things where when I was a teenager or like when I was a kid in my high school jazz band, someone were to tell me like, oh, you're gonna work on an album with your dad, I would just be like, first of all, I wouldn't believe it, but second of all, if I did believe it, I would think that I would be playing drums, you know, right. on an album with him or something. Mm-hmm. And so it's just really cool how life just has these weird twists and turns, and ultimately, you know, you can't achieve your dreams maybe like in not the most direct way, but mm-hmm. it's like alternative version of your dreams.
Sure, you know? Sure. I love that. That's so awesome that you're able to work with your dad on that album. And of course, the recognition it's getting is also amazing. And you just released another, you released a new song last month, Cyclone.
Yeah.
Tell me about that one.
Yeah, that was, you know, after the Stun Tour didn't happen, I kind of immediately, and after the the album with my dad, I immediately shifted gears to work on new music. And I had these songs in the works for a while. And for whatever reason, I just felt extremely inspired, you know, after working on that project with my dad. I mean, for like obvious reasons, not for whatever reason. For right, obvious right. reasons, I sure. was very inspired after working on that album. And so I started working on these songs that I had this, you know, vague idea of kind of what I wanted to write about, but it all kind of made itself very clear to me. And it was just spending time at home with my parents for the first time as an adult was a very jarring experience for me. It was mm-hmm. kind of like the first time that I felt, you know, the passage of time and how it relates to my relationship with them and my relationship with myself, you know, and just getting older and seeing my parents get older. And so all these things thematically were very fresh and very, you know, they were kind of this, this gravity that was this force that was constantly on my shoulders. And so it all happened pretty fast. I started working on Cyclones, you know, last summer, I think. And, most of the album came together very quickly. And yeah, Cyclones is basically about that. It's about this like period in my life where I'm kind of at odds with where I am mentally and how like my relationship with myself is affecting the people around me. And yeah, I mean, I think in this journey of trying to, you know, express myself as an artist, I think this new music is probably the most, you know, the most direct I've ever been about kind of what's on my mind and being very specific about what I'm feeling at this point in my life. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I think in the past, maybe with Orange Earth and even with Stunned, I think, you know, it's all viewed through very, through this, like through a filter, through almost like a poetic, you know, rose colored filter of either nostalgia or, you know, I just think that this new music is a lot more direct mm-hmm. in sure. where I'm at and what I'm feeling, you know? Mm-hmm.
And do you have other tracks ready to go? Like what's coming up next for you?
Yeah, I have a song called Prudence and Poise coming out February 5th. And
oh, so, awesome.
And same, it's just kind of like where I'm at mentally and that song specifically is more so about how the passage of time I always thought was, you know, guaranteed a certain amount of wisdom. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought that, you know, by the time I'm 30, I'm going to have things figured out. And then I turned 30 and then I didn't have anything figured out, you know.
Funny how that works.
I had less things figured out. I had less answers than I had when I was 23. And so... And it's kind of about that, about how, you know, coming to terms with that, that you're not necessarily guaranteed answers, you know, as time passes. And that can suck.
Yeah. Totally.
but yeah, I think, yeah, it's just coming to terms with that. And very so cool. I think, yeah, that's kind of what that thematically, that's what this next album is about. Just kind of time and how much of a trip it is.
Yeah, that's, I mean, exactly. And all we have right now is time to sit and dwell on these things because nobody can right. go outside and do much of anything, right? So you have a record coming out or potentially in the near yeah. future, I think. Okay, right on.
Yeah, I think I can say, I mean, I don't know, maybe I'll get in trouble for this, but it's going to come out. It's going to come out mid-March.
Oh, awesome. And, very cool.
Yeah.
That is super exciting. And then what about like videos or anything that you do, any music videos?
Yeah. And of course it's like, it's very tricky right now because of mm-hmm. COVID and being as careful as possible and you know, just making sure that you're not ever putting anyone at risk mm-hmm. because you want to shoot a video, you know?
Right.
So yeah, but I'm, you know, just trying to do things with as little bit of resources as possible and just trying to convey visually whatever it is the song is about in a way that's, you know, it's tough to have COVID kind of dictate your art. and dictate your output. It's not a fun thing at all, but obviously, like, we have to, this is the world we live in. We have to be very careful. We have to be responsible. And so, but yeah, long story short, yes, there will be very videos.
Cool. Very cool. I can't wait to see them. And thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, man. Honestly, I'm so honored, and I'm very grateful to be a part of this, but also I'm very grateful for you to, like, just to exist, because this is, your show is, like,
dude, that means so much to me. That means so
important
much to,
like, to me, and to I'm sure so many other listeners who, you know, like, are just fans of not only music, but just, like, artists and the story behind every artist. So I still, speaking of, you know, feeling unworthy, I still feel very weird about doing this, because this is, like, amazing to me.
No, this is awesome, dude. I really appreciate you, and I appreciate all the kind words, man. Like, thank you so much. Of course, dude. I love your records, and I can't wait to hear the new stuff coming out. And once this is all gone, and, you know, everyone could be around everybody, I can't wait to see you live and do this in person sometime.
Thanks, man. I would love that. Yeah, that'd be amazing.
That would be okay. So, well, thank you so much. And I have one more question for you. I want to know if you have any advice for aspiring artists.
Yeah, I think just listen to as many different things as possible. I think that it's important for artists to develop an identity that they are confident in and that truly represents every part of them. Because I do think that sometimes artists can feel pressured to, you know, fit in a certain mold, whether it's a genre or a look or a sound or whatever. But I do think I think everyone has something to say. And it's just allowing yourself to consume as many different types of music, as many different, you know, forms of this art, to be able to express yourself in as genuine a way as possible. So yeah, just listen to a bunch of music.